Thank you. My name's Ryan. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
And I am happy to be back. I was thinking a little bit about my talk and about where I left off, and I kind of left off on step 6 and 7, you know, and I know there's some new people here and some people that weren't here last week who might be like, what the heck is this guy talking about, if I start off there, but I'll try and give the spoilers, or whatever they do when you watch a TV show and they tell you what happened last season, enough so it's relevant and it captures the message of what I'm trying to say, which is that you know, that recovery is possible. You know, recovery is possible. We have a solution, and the solution is outlined in this book, The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I listened to my talk from last week, and I made two mistakes. I didn't talk about the big book enough for it to be a big book workshop talk, and I forgot coffee. And I think I'm all set for this week. But you know, those cliff notes from last week would basically be that, you know, I got to a point that I didn't ever want to go back to. You know, my drinking took me to just this really bad, really negative place, you know, where I was hopeless, you know, where my mind, my body, and my spirit were all just kind of broken, you know, and that prompted me to come to AA, you know, to get a sponsor who took me through this book, you know, where the steps are outlined. And I did an inventory. I talked about that last week, you know, and that kind of led me into step 6 and 7, you know, and step 6 and 7 were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character and ask God to remove, and humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. And it talks about working on our character defects, you know, and how that ties into recovery is that it's a spiritual solution for me, you know, and that means that if I can improve my spirituality and if I can act in a spiritual way, it will change the way I feel internally. You know, if I act better, I will feel better. And if this is the case, then I will not need to put a drink or a drug in my body to change the way I feel. And step 6 and 7 are kind of a process in which I change, you know. And step 6 and 7 start on page 76 in the big book. It's, I believe, the shortest steps in the big book. It's really only a couple of lines. It's like a paragraph or two. And it says, are we now ready to have God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now remove them all, every one? If we still cling to one, we will not let it go. We ask, when we're ready, we say something like this: my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of usefulness to myself and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have completed step 7. So, at the top of the page it says we're at step 6, and then two paragraphs later we're at step 7. So, when I was doing my steps, I kind of liked that. I was like, yeah, I just knocked out a 1/6 of my step work in two paragraphs, you know? Because, like, in my mind, like, I wanted, like, an effect. You know, I wanted to feel better. And that was like why I was doing the steps. That was why I was in recovery. You know, I used to drink and it would change the way I feel. And then I came here and I wanted to feel better, you know? So doing two of my steps pretty quickly was appealing to me. And the way I did it was I did my fourth and my fifth step where I did an inventory. So then I kind of had all these defects of character like in my mind from doing that, you know, because I talked about all my resentments and all my fears and areas where I was selfish and my part in those things. I kind of had defects like in the front of my mind. So I made a list of them, and then I prayed every day for 2 weeks for God to remove them. And then it's funny, like I did that when I had like 8 months sober maybe, and then I don't think I did any 6 and 7 work for like another couple of years after that, you know. I wish I could say I like just incorporated into my recovery, but I kind of did it then. And then I didn't like think about it again until my character defects were like really starting to pop up. And you know, that's just my experience with doing it. But when I was reviewing it, I kind of noticed some similarities between step 6 and 7 and step 3, which was that the main like point or the main action of the step for me was to turn it over, you know? And that was always hard for me, you know? It was hard for me to do with step 3, and it's hard for me to do with step 6 and 7. I like to run the show. I like to be in charge of things. I like to cling on to this belief that I grew up with, that like I need to control the destiny of my life. I need to if I'm not acting in a way, I need to find a way to be stronger than it and more disciplined, and I need to figure it out and create the solution. And certain things are just for me to deal with. You know, they're not for me to give up. Like, I need to deal with these. And that's the case for 6 and 7, you know. And in the 12 and 12, it talks a little more about the steps. And step 7, it talks a lot about how the main spiritual principle behind that step is humility, you know. And for me, I don't like to practice humility. I typically get humbled, you know. It's like I don't want to turn over a defect of character like pride or greed or something, and what it does is it'll damage my relationships, or it'll change the way I feel about myself. I'll start feeling poorly, or something will happen that will make me take a look at it. And sometimes that line is really thin, you know. But there's been a whole bunch of times where I've had to turn over these defects of character. And, you know, the worst and the hardest ones for me to do are when I'm right. You know, I remember one of the first things I had to turn over was I had this job, pretty newly sober, and I worked there for a while. And then like one day they started kind of cutting my hours, you know. I used to get 40 hours a week and I was a full-time employee, and then they kind of cut me to 30. And I couldn't really, it was like just enough to not really be able to pay my bills with that 10-hour reduction a week. And I talked to my manager, and she's like, "Oh, don't worry, we'll bump you back up for next week." And then I went back the next week, and I was at 30 again, and I got upset. And then I talked to her again, and she said, "Don't worry, we'll put you back up to 40 for next week." And then I went back the next week and I was at 30 again. And I remember I just had such just a self-righteous anger, you know. I was just like, how dare these people? She lied to me twice. And, you know, and I thought that I was, that my anger was justified because I was right, you know. I thought that I was doing what I said I was going to do. I was holding up my end of the bargain. So it was like, you know, so I have every right to be angry and upset with these people. But I really had a choice. You know, I could be angry. I could look for a new job. Or I could accept the situation as it was, you know. And I decided to look for a new job, you know. And because of that, I found a job I really loved, you know. So The point I guess I'm getting of that is that is that I have choices, you know. I can sit in this anger, I can sit in my defects of character, I can be right, or I can turn it over, and I might find myself in a situation that's even better, or a situation that I'm supposed to be in. Because after that, it was clear to me that that was not the job for me to grow in, you know? And this step also stresses, like, just being usefulness, you know, maximum usefulness to people, you know? And it's like, you know, how does that tie into to everyday situations? It's like, when I'm talking here, it's like my ego wants me to sound really good, right? And if I sound really good, it could help people, right? Because it could promote recovery. But if I care so much about what people think of me, that's also not good either. So, like, sometimes those character defects are not, you know, it's like some level of it is good and some level of it is too much, you know? And it's important for me to turn it over and to also talk to other people about it for me. You know, because sometimes if I talk to my sponsor about something, or if I get some feedback from other people, it makes it a little bit more clear where I am supposed to be, you know? So one other thing that I wanted to say about that, about 6 and 7, was I had this experience where I was able to dive a little bit deeper into it, where I used to have this belief that if you had like negative thoughts or like defects of character popped up, but you didn't act on them, like you were doing really good, and that was like peak spirituality, you know? Like, for example, if someone cuts me off in traffic and I don't yell at him or scream at him or honk at him or flip him off, then I did good. And then I got challenged with this belief, like, well, in your mind, you still wanted to do all these horrible things to this guy. So someone challenged me and said, you know, the next level of spirituality is turning over those thoughts, you know? And he said, we read this book about it. It's not an AA book, so I won't talk about it too much. But the main concept was that, you know, it was like when these negative thoughts come over, turn them over immediately. And I was able to work on my character defects on an even deeper level, you know? So it's cool, because there's always ways to grow. You know, at first it was like not outwardly harm anyone, and next it's like inwardly not even experience the same negative emotion that I used to. And what happened for me was, one day I was working on patience, and I was like praying every day for more patience, which is a risky thing to do, but because people say it's a risky thing to do because God will send you situations where you have to be patient. But I was praying for patience, and I remember I was going to go to the gym, and I went to my car, I started the car, and I realized I forgot my headphones, and I was just like, oh, I should just go get them. And I literally had a picture in my head of how I used to react. I could literally see myself cursing, slamming the door, and like my typical reaction, and I just didn't have it, you know. And for me, like, that was a level of spiritual experience, you know. It was a change in my behavior and my thinking. Like, literally, if that happened probably, you know, a dozen times in my life, and I think every other time before that I had the reaction of cursing, slamming the door, and running upstairs to go get him. And it was cool, you know. It was cool to be able to say that, you know, I acted in a way that I'm a little bit more proud of today, you know. And it can be on anything. It can be on gym headphones or the way I treat someone else, you know. But I believe that is one of the two things our program's about, you know. One of it is letting go and turning over, and the other one is just trying to be a little bit better today than I was yesterday. And And I think that's about all I have to talk about steps 6 and 7. Mm-hmm. Which leads me into steps 8 and 9, which are about amends. And this is a topic I really like. I had a lot of relationships that were harmed from drinking. You know, I had I didn't really talk to my family much before I got sober because I harmed them, and they were embarrassed and hurt, and they had figured out that they were powerless to help me. You know, I'm sure that if my family thought they could help me, they would have, but they realized that, you know, there's only so many rehabs they can send me to. You know, there's only so many times they can give me money. There's only so many, you know, they just kind of realize that there's nothing more we can do for him. And I had a lot of, you know, a lot of harms I caused from drinking, you know. So I got sober in Florida, and most of my amends were in New Jersey. So I got a little bit of time to think about it, you know, and a little bit of time to talk to my sponsor about it, and a little bit of time to prepare for it. And it says that amends are, you know, a chance for us to clean our side of the street, you know, and clear the wreckage of our past. And at first I kind of thought an amends was similar to an apology. And I talked to my sponsor and I read the reading about it. And my understanding of it now is that an amends is more trying to fix the damage I caused. You know? Like, if I were to, you know, smash a wall, you know, an apology would be like saying that I'm sorry for breaking your wall, you know? But an amends would kind of be like, hey, I would like to do the best of my ability to repair your wall, and you know, and fix that wrong I did within reason, you know? And I kind of followed this process when I did my amends, you know, which were, it was basically a 3-step process. It was basically, the first step was that, you know, saying I was wrong, you know, and addressing my wrong. The second step was asking what I could do to fix it. And the third step was asking if there was anything else that I had left out. And by doing this, I was able to fix relationships in my life that I did not think I would be able to. I thought these relationships were permanently damaged. You know, it says in the book, on page 78, that, let's see, 9 out of 10 cases, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own faults. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise where we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally they offer assistance. And, you know, that was my experience, you know, like family members that I didn't talk to for years and just had really bad relationships, I guess, saw that I was sincere, respected what I was doing, and accepted my amends, you know. And that's just like, what a gift, you know, What an absolute gift. And I think that for me, like, the actual formal amends of making, of, you know, going to them and making this amends and saying those things, I think was the start. And I think that following it up with consistent action, consistent phone calls, consistent cards, consistent, you know, showing up, reinforced it. But, you know, one example that I'll give, though, is my mom. You know, on my birthday, before one or two birthdays before I got sober, she wrote me a card, and this was like while she was still talking to me, and it said, "Ryan, happy birthday. I didn't get you anything because you didn't deserve it," from Mom. I literally received this card, you know, and like, you know, that I mean, you can just gather everything you want about our relationship from that card. I mean, I was a truly selfish and thoughtless son, and she, you know, just was you know, she was just basically done with the relationship, you know, and knew, and you know, and anyway, you know, that's where our relationship was, you know, and I made this amends, and I called her, and I wrote cards while I was in Florida. I eventually visited a couple times, and I made amends, and I continued this relationship, and like now, this is the relationship I have with my mom. I talk to her about every other day on the phone. She comes over once a week, or I go to her house once a week, and she spends an hour or two with the grandkids. She knows like almost everything that's going on with me, and if she needs help with something, she calls me. When I moved back here from Florida, she offered to let me stay with her until I found a place of my own. I don't know anyone that loves AA more than my mom too, by the way. But you know, from this relationship of just no relationship to just being one of the closest people in my life that started off with an amends, you know, and you know, I don't know, just. I had other experiences, you know, and I tried to follow the suggestions in the book. You know, one of them was that you don't talk about how the other person harmed you when you make the amends. You know, you keep it about the wrongs that you've done, and that was something I did. And I also went into the amends with the possibility of rejection in my mind. You know, I went into all the amends saying this guy could spit on my face and then tell me to leave. And if that happens, I will say, okay, you know? And anyway, by doing these amends, something happened that was very profound, which was that I gained the ability to hold my head up high again. You know, I spent years just ducking people and not being, you know, not having any level of confidence, you know, because I just screwed over so many people and I was just always worried about someone catching me or, you know. And then when I decided to make amends, you know, if someone were to catch me, I would tell them, like, I'm willing to do whatever I can to make it right, you know. And by having this attitude, like, I was able to just carry myself differently, you know. I think that's one of the biggest gifts of steps 8 and 9, you know, or number one, you get to fix these damages you've done, but number two, you get to, you know, like the side effect of doing that is that you're able to hold your head up high. You know, if I've made right all the wrongs I've done, and I'm willing to fix the wrongs I've done that I don't know about, then I have no reason to duck anyone, you know? And I mean, for years and years and years, that was not the case, you know? So, I think that was one of the best things that came from it. You know, and I remember it was funny. You know, I remember after I did start talking to my mom again a little bit, you know, I remember she asked, she's like, aren't you going to make amends to me yet? And I was like, oh, I'm only on step three. And she was like, all right. I was like, but I will when I get there, you know. And then when I was flying home and I was planning to make a bunch of amends when I was home in Jersey, I remember my sponsor being like, do you know what you're going to say? And I was like, I think so. And he's like, all right, let's talk about it a little bit. And then we kind of fine-tuned exactly what I would say. So I think that also having a sponsor to kind of just kind of hold your hand just made it a lot better, you know, because after every amends, I would kind of check in with them and let him know how it went. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, that kind of happened to me one time. Or you know, or good job, you know, let's do the next one now. Who's next, you know? And that's one of the cool things about the process is that, you know, I wasn't doing it alone. You know, I had supports, I had a sponsor, and I had people with me, you know, while I was doing it. And in the book, you know, it talks about after you do your ninth step, you know, it talks about the ninth step promises. And those are on page 84, at the top of 84. It says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us which we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And you know, I used to hear this in meetings, and I still do. And every time I hear it, I kind of think about how powerful it is, you know? Particularly, because it was what I wanted, you know? I think when I came to AA, and I had just been drinking and lying to myself and failing, you know? I came to this place where I was hopeless, you know, and I was in a lot of pain, you know. And at that time, I didn't think that there was any purpose for my pain. I thought that life was, that life was just cold, you know. Life was just cold, and that was like the way of the world, you know. That sometimes you just dealt a bad hand, and life is just hard, you know? And I wanted to know these things, you know? I wanted to know freedom and happiness. I didn't want to regret the past, you know, nor wish to shut the door on it. And I didn't really think it was possible for me, you know? I thought that there was no way that I would ever have any sort of gratitude or any sort of positive thing that would that would come from this just pain and just negative place I was in, you know? But it's funny, it's like, I have a gratitude for it today, you know, because I have a belief in my heart that I would not have changed, I would not have found recovery, I would not have fixed these relationships with my family and with these other people, I would not have found a higher power, I would not be able to help other alcoholics. I don't think I would have been able to do any of these things without that pain. You know, so when it says we don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean I'm happy that I stole money from my little sisters and when they opened up their piggy bank they started crying. You know, it doesn't mean I'm happy that happened, but it means that I understand the necessity of these horrible things that I did and the horrible way that I felt in order for me to fully surrender to recovery. You know, because I couldn't get very far in recovery until I fully surrendered, you know, until I fully surrendered that I didn't have the answers. I couldn't manage my own life. I had to admit I was an alcoholic. My life was unmanageable. I had to continue with the step work. Until I fully surrendered and did these things, I didn't get very far in recovery. So now I can have some level of gratitude for these things, and I can also understand the utility of these things, you know, because I can meet another alcoholic in a meeting or in a detox, and they can tell me, hey, I just did all these horrible things, I want to kill myself, and I don't think that it's possible for me to have a happy and productive life. And I can sit there and I can say, you know, I've been where you're at, I understand exactly what you're feeling, and recovery is possible for you. You know, it might not be easy, it might not happen as quickly as you want it to, but recovery is possible for you. You know, I have this gift I can give people because of that pain, you know, that was freely given to me from other alcoholics, and that's why I have gratitude for it. You know, so when I hear these 9-step promises, you know, it sounds like they're selling me something. You know, you will know peace, and you will, you know, not, you know, just it sounds real good. But the truth is that what we have to offer in AA, it is really good. You know, and it sure beats the way I used to live. And I used to have those feelings of uselessness and self-pity, you know, and resentment towards myself, you know. I talked about how I used to tell myself every day, I'm not going to drink today. And then every day I would wind up drinking. You know, I was a daily drinker and I drank every day. And almost every day I would tell myself, I'm going to stop tomorrow or I'm going to stop or I'm not going to drink today. And I would lie to myself. And what happened was it slowly deteriorated my self-confidence, my self-esteem. And I really, really began to hate myself, you know. So when I heard these promises about just, you know, getting some of this stuff back, you know, it was appealing to me, you know. There's a story in The Doctor's Opinion about a psychiatrist who meets an alcoholic and he sees him a year later and he says he could barely recognize this guy. He said when I met him he was just trembling and a pitiful wreck, you know, and I saw him a year later and I could barely recognize this guy. You know, he was glowing, he had a sense of self-reliance, and he was comfortable in his own skin. And that was what I wanted, you know. I just didn't want to be the person I was anymore. And when I learned about this 12-step process into growing, you know, and becoming a better version of myself, it was really appealing to me, you know. And that's why I think these promises and these work are important, you know, because some of this stuff is hard, you know. It's hard to go to people who are really mad at you and say, I was wrong. You know, it's hard to do that stuff. You know, it's hard to get humble and say, I am failing at this or I can't handle this, you know. So there has to be some payoff or something that makes it worth it, you know. And some of those things are these promises for me, you know? And it's manifested itself in a whole bunch of ways, you know? I can't talk about the 180 that my life has took anymore, you know? It's like when I got sober, I was living at my mom's house before I got sober. And then I got kicked out of there because I stole a bunch of stuff and I wrote out some checks to myself. So, and that's not a good crime because, like, you literally are giving evidence when you do it. So at any point in time, my mom could have just called the police on me and had me arrested. And it's funny, like, I should be a long-term thinker. When I was a child, when I was in elementary school, I took chess lessons from a grandmaster. I was a competitive chess player. And, you know, I can see moves and moves ahead, and my best crime is to write a check to myself. So, you know, that's where alcoholism took me. But anyway, the reason I was talking about that, I don't know. I guess I'll have to listen to the tape and figure out where I was going that, and I'll probably be mad at myself. But the point is that we have this opportunity, you know, to just grow and change and make this 180, you know? And that's what I was talking about, was that, you know, just this 180 in every aspect of my life, you know. So I was living with my mom. She threw me out, and I was bouncing around. I was homeless and bouncing around for a bit. I was a student at Rutgers University. I got thrown out. You know, I had basically close to a 4.0 in high school, and then when I went to college, I had a 0.4, and I got thrown out of there. I'd been arrested a half a dozen times. I'd been, I just torched all the relationships with my family. I let my little sisters down. I got fired from jobs. I got evicted. It's just everything in my life was just negative, you know? And then after a couple years in recovery, it's like everything basically made a 180, you know? It's like I had all these relationships fixed, you know? I had held a job for a while, you know? I was back in school. So outwardly, all these things were, like, starting to fix, you know? And it's like, that was the evidence, you know? That was the evidence that, of the transformative nature of recovery, you know? It was just an opportunity to fix all these things that I torched to the ground. And the number one thing that I got from being in recovery, from working on my character defects and from making my amends and stuff, was just that internal stuff, you know, just that, that feeling of having some sort of purpose, you know, that feeling of being comfortable in my skin, you know, that feeling of just genuinely liking the person I am. You know, the feeling of genuinely believing I have something to offer other people, you know? All those just non-tangible things that I gained from being in recovery was the stuff that really mattered to me. So it's like my life did make a 180 in all these respects with, like, the external stuff, like school and work and personal relationships and stuff. But the stuff that was really, really important to me was that internal stuff. You know, just being able to comfortably go to bed at night and just know that I had done the best I could that day. You know, just that was the stuff that was really important to me and really mattered to me. And I believe that happened from doing this process. You know, from working on these character defects, from making these amends, from turning it over and from getting out of my own way. You know, so So when I have the opportunity to share this experience and pass this experience on to other people, you know, I'm always grateful for that opportunity, and I'm always passionate about that opportunity, you know? So when I come next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about steps 10, 11, and 12. And that will be exciting, you know? That is kind of, was taught to me like the way you maintain your sobriety, you know? I think from doing steps 1 through 9 for me, I think that was enough for me to start that process of having a spiritual experience, you know? And I think for me, the spiritual experience for me was just the process of becoming a new person. You know, I believe that the old Ryan had transformed into this new person, you know? The person that I used to be could not be sober and have the life I have today, you know? And I think that I think that was the spiritual experience for me, was that when I was at 6 months and I looked back at where I was on my first day sober, it was like, wow, I've come so far, you know? And then when I had a year, I looked back on where I was at 6 months and it was like, wow, I can't believe how far I've come from that 6 month part, you know, that 6 month mark. And it was like every year I would look back at where I was a year ago and it would be like, wow, you know? And after a while it was kind of funny, you know, it was like, I thought I was like, I had it all together when I had like 6 months, and then I had a year and I was like, wow, like I didn't know anything. And then when I had like 2 years, I was like, wow, I didn't know anything when I had a year. And when I had 3 years, it was like, wow, it was like, you know, and I'm always excited to find out, you know, the next thing I'm going to find out, the next path on my journey, you know. And that's part of the difference between today and back then on day one, is that I look forward to the next chapter of my journey. You know, I look forward to the next challenge, the next adventure, the next opportunity, the next thing that's going to happen, you know. When I was drinking and I would just have this sense of just, when is everything going to blow up? You know, when am I going to just blow my life up next? You know, when am I going to do something where people are mad at me, where I wake up in jail, where I can't remember and people are mad? Like, when is the next thing like that going to happen? You know, and today I have this feeling and this belief and this faith that whatever the next chapter in my life takes me, you know, I will be able to show up to the best of my ability, you know, and hopefully I'll be able to practice these principles and to enjoy the good times, you know, and get through the bad times, you know. So with that being said, I'm going to close it up, and I will open it up to sharing for you guys. So that's it.